Hi, I'm Talissa.
And I'm Rachel, and this is Transatlantic Crime, a true crime podcast that covers stories from each side of the pond. Every week, we will both cover a separate story with a running theme.
Disclaimer, this podcast will contain swearing and details that some people may find offensive. If you are of a sensitive disposition, listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Transatlantic Crime.
So close.
Hi, Talissa. How are you?
I am good, Rachel. How are you?
I'm great.
Great.
How was the Jubilee? That's this weekend, right?
Yeah, we got 4 days off because the Queen's been on the throne for 70 years, which is like the longest reigning monarch ever, like beats Queen Victoria.
Yeah, she'll never die.
I don't think she's ever going to fucking die. The oldest woman in Britain is like 112, I think. So the Queen, and think how not good her life would have been compared to the Queen. So she's going to fucking nail it. Like the Queen Mother lived to like 100 and something, definitely. So
yeah,
I was saying to Carly, can you imagine fucking 80 more years of this till you're 112? Like I couldn't fucking hack it.
I feel like I could do it if my body didn't age. But I feel unfortunately, like, that's
not under... I could do it if
under...
I was the Queen.
Yeah. If you've got everyone doing everything for you and all you have to do is spend time with your little corgis and write some letters every once in a while, then
you've got the best of everything as well.
You do.
A lot of people in England are like, there's like a cost of living crisis going on and... basically companies and the government are dicking us over left, right and center, and it's just cheeky of the Queen to be like, oh, like I have to do fuck all and I've like got loads of money and like,
let's celebrate
here
me.
Have a day off. And like I get not being a royalist in theory, like I totally understand why people aren't, and I understand that it's rich people not good, poor people need money, like I get that, but I can't help but like it. I just like the history, like have you seen The Crown?
Yeah, I've watched some of it. Yeah
And we've got like a 1,000-year old monarchy. I just love it. I can't help, I've got a soft spot for her, the Queen. I can't help it.
It's the same as feeling that way about true crime. It's like it's bad and it's shitty and a lot of people are in pain from it, but it's still really interesting to follow. And it's your face right now.
Oh, I'm disgusted with myself for many reasons. So this weekend we went to a fete. Don't know if you have those, but it's a fete is like it's always in the daytime. It's very wholesome, very kid friendly. It's usually a village fete. So it's everybody in that village.
How do you spell that?
F-E-T-E. With like an accent over it. Yeah. I think it might be French for like party or something. But it's, you all gather in like the village green. And there's like old ladies bake cakes. And then there's usually somebody playing music, a band or something. And then a bric-a-brac stall, a secondhand bookstall. There's an amazing game called Whack-a-Rat, which you probably wouldn't like, but it's like somebody drops, which is basically a sock fashioned as a rat. They drop it through a pipe and you have to whack it with a bat, but you have to like time it so that you whack it. It's so difficult. I've never seen anyone do it.
What is this, the 1930s?
It really felt like I'd gone back to the 1930s. It was so fucking quaint and charming. So I did that, and there was a dog show. There was like, and the prizes are like waggiest tail, most handsome. Like it's just all so wholesome. And I had like 3 ciders, and it was it was just lovely. And I had like a Oreo cheesecake off the cake stall, and then we also have like a tombola, which is where there's bottles of like wine or beer or. But then there's some like booby prizes. So some of them are like a fruit shoot drink, a kid's drink, or like a bottle of water. So you might get something good, or you might get something crap, or you might get something nothing at all. So you pay like £6 for like 12 tickets, and then you have to see if any of your numbers are on the bottles. I didn't win anything, so that was annoying.
Damn it.
Yeah. But it was, yeah, lovely, wholesome day. But then today I feel like I've been run over by a fucking bus because I went to a fete for half a day. Like, this is where I'm at. It's just exhausting.
You need a nap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lovely, lovely day. Very British, very quaint, very extremely cute.
What about you? What have you been up to? Setting off fireworks?
I've been working.
High-fiving
I've been
eagles.
Working a lot. Yeah, obviously shooting off guns, eating meat.
Yeah. Having a
what else
hoe down.
Very American.
Whatever
going
that
to
is.
A cowboy show.
Yeah, the rodeo.
The rodeo. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. No, I haven't been doing any of that. I have been preparing. I'm very excited, but very nervous. Tomorrow, I'm getting this thing removed from my mouth.
Oh my god, it's been such a journey. Yes,
it's been such a journey. And
it really has.
I am really nervous because it's going to be painful and it's going to be recovery. They will, but that part is painful. That part I hate, when they stick a needle in your mouth. Sorry, everyone.
I'm not going to lie. It sounds pretty gnarly, but you're hardcore and you can do this.
Oh, I'm so nervous.
I believe in you.
But thanks. That reminds me, I am going to be taking a week off. So I think you are going to have a special guest next week, right?
Yes, we will do that.
It's going to be a surprise. Everyone send me well wishes because I'm really nervous, but I am really happy to get this stupid thing out of my mouth.
Oh, mate, I'll be thinking of you. You can get through it. You're hardcore. I believe in
thanks.
You.
Thanks. Thanks, pal.
That's all right. Let me know how it goes.
Yeah. Other than that, I haven't really been doing anything other than...
You've just been sat around thinking about that all weekend.
I have. And working. So
you are
this will like
fucking
force
Rihanna.
Me to...
You're like, work. That's all you ever do.
It's true. I love working. So, well, I don't love it, but yeah, I'm really excited. I keep talking about this show that I'm working on that's coming out next month. That's what I've been working on. We're almost done with it. And we'll probably talk about it on the podcast because, Talissa, I want you to watch it too.
Yeah, I'll watch the shit out of it. And now I know what bits like you particularly do as well after like finding out. So that's cool. Oh, I remember I promised that I was going to read out somebody's correspondence to us.
Ooh.
And it was to do with, you know, we were wondering about babies on passports.
Yeah.
It was to do with that. It was a while ago and I forgot until now. Wait there. So it's Lauren Churchill. She is a Patreon, I believe, and fan of the show, and she's been really supportive. So absolute babe. But she said, just listening to this week's podcast and you were talking about passports. Until 1998, children could travel on their parents' passports. Then the law changed and they had to have their own.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. That's in England, right?
Yeah.
Or the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And that was relevant to our story that we did a couple of weeks ago.
It was the one I did when we were in LA. So it was the guy who had loads of women. He had like women on the go for his spying. And that's how she found out that he was a dad, I think. She looked at his passport.
That makes so much sense. But that was in the 2000s.
But it was 1998 that it changed. So he might have had it on there. And then, because your passport lasts for 10 years here.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean,
that was a great shout.
Either way, she ignored some massive red flags, so...
Good call, Lauren.
Oh, yeah, I was basically really tired last night after the fete. Tom doesn't go to bed until, like, midnight or later, and I can't fucking deal with that. I was like, I'm so tired, I'm going to bed. So I went to bed, and I had, like, earplugs in, and I had a face mask over my face, so blind and deaf for, like...
Yeah.
for all I'm just completely like devoid of senses. And I thought, do you know what? Like, before I go to sleep, I'm just going to stretch my legs a bit. So I just put the face mask up a tiny bit so I could see like a slither. And then like I went by the side of the bed and I like, you know, when you do like, you know, bend down and touch your toes, I did that. And then as I raised my head, I thought, I feel like, you know, when you just get the sixth sense that someone's watching you. Fucking looked at the door and Thomas just stood there and I was like, make a noise. And he was like, I thought I made enough of a noise coming up the stairs. And I was like, fucking hell, there will be like no more watching me sleep, no more. And he was like, what are you even doing? And I was like, I'm stretching.
It's like a horror movie.
It was honestly like a shot from a horror movie. Just watching, so like stood at the door. I was like,
I did that to someone at work this week where I was sitting in a desk that I don't, I was sitting in a desk that I don't normally sit in, and I was just sitting there, you know, working, and someone comes out. I assume that they saw me, and then they turned around and they jumped and they were like, I was not expecting you to be there. And it reminded me, those kinds of things always remind me of in the sixth sense, when he walks into the kitchen and all the cupboards are open, the mom walks into the God. Kitchen horrifying. And all the cupboards are open and the kid is just sitting there terrified.
Honestly, I'm surrounded by people who are like fucking so quiet. Like Carly's so quiet. Tom's really quiet. And I appreciate it like on one level because I really fucking hate people that make loads of noise like for no reason.
Yeah.
But then then you realize that it's a necessary evil so that you don't fucking shit yourself every time you turn around thinking there's
That's
an intruder.
That's one reason why I know that you sleep with earplugs and everything and all.
Yeah.
You basically have to shut everything down. But
I really can't do
that because I am too scared of those moments that I'm going to wake up and something or someone is going to be staring down at me, or it's too late for something to, for me to do something.
I went through it in my head and I was like, what would I even do if he was an intruder? Like, I was by the side of the bed, I had nothing near me. And he was in the doorway and I was in like a bedroom with no other exit. So I was fucked. I was like, what would I even have done? I was like, maybe picked up the lamp and swung it in with that. But like, he's a lot bigger than me. So
I think that all the time, like, what am I going to use in my bedroom? My lamp.
Yeah.
My lamp.
But you're going to need to do a Georgie and stash a knife and a candle and...
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember what else she had in there, but it was like a survival kit on the side of her bed.
I also have for a while I slept with my tennis racket, but that wouldn't do anything.
That's just going to bounce off their face.
Exactly. I didn't sleep with it, but it was like on the side of my bed. But now I do actually have a baseball bat.
Yeah.
But I also think whoever breaks in is going to be stronger than me and they're probably going to use that bat.
Like,
so that's
overall.
What I always think of too. So at the end of the day, I just decided that I would jump out the window.
Yeah, but in England, the houses are all double stories. Nobody lives in a bungalow unless they're old. Whereas I've noticed in America, loads of houses are on one level.
Yeah.
Unless it's an apartment.
Yeah, unless you're in an apartment, yeah.
Yeah, which is because you've just got so much room. So you don't need to stack stuff on top of one another. I think, yeah, it went through my mind what I would do and... I'd just be dead. And then I said to Tom, oh, that's my worst nightmare. There's just some fucking random man in the house. And he was like, well, he'd have to get through me first to get to you. So I'm probably dead downstairs. Aww. And I thought, that's sweet.
That's sweet, but also terrifying at the same time.
So you're dead. And while I'm being attacked, I go, yeah. Oh, he sacrificed himself for me. While I'm dying.
At least you've had that. You have that.
Yeah, he's like, you can die knowing I tried to save you.
Or, hopefully, Talissa, that noise will wake you up.
And then I'll get the fuck out.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a good segue into our two-parter this week, which we're going to continue talking about LA crimes.
Yeah, there's so many. I started watching a random documentary today, The Toolbox Killers, or like an ID oxygen program, and it's about the toolbox killers, and they were in LA.
Right.
Do you remember
much about them though?
Oh, it's it's really good. Like, this journalist basically gets in with one of them because they were like a pair, and starts talking to him in prison when he's in his 70s. And you know, sometimes like they get flattered by a female journalist's attention, and then they get really into talking to them. Like, yeah, she managed to just weasel her way in and talk to him, and he explains like all the murders to her and stuff, and they're fucking horrible.
That does sound very familiar.
Let me tell you who they are.
That was something that happened in the 70s, right?
Yeah, and they only kidnapped like young, pretty blonde girls with blue eyes, pretty much, and tortured them horribly. Took photos and recordings of it and stuff. Oh, it's Lawrence Bittaker and Roy Norris. They had five victims. They had five victims from June to October 1979. So imagine if they weren't caught.
Wait, June, July, August, September. That's one a month.
I know. Yeah. And they kind of had a...
They kept doing that.
They had a thing where they wanted to go capture someone that's 13, 14, 15, 16, like all the teen ages. Ew. Fucking gross. Like, one of them was a convicted rapist, and the other guy was just a massive psychopath. Lawrence Bittaker was like a really intelligent psychopath. He had an IQ of like 138. You have to have an IQ of over 130 to be a Mensa. And then, which is like an intelligence, I don't know, just like we're clever group. So he's super clever. And he got put into prison for stabbing someone, but he didn't kill them.
Okay.
And then he met this Roy Norris guy who was a sex offender who'd never murdered anybody, but had raped two women. And then they met in prison, and then they would like write down all these horrible fantasies of what they wanted to do to women and then sell them to the other prisoners so they could like read it. Oh, they're just so gross. Grim. Yeah.
It's so interesting how true crime is just full of, if those two men never met, they probably wouldn't have gotten to that horrible stage that they got to. But for some reason, the stars were aligned.
I know.
And they met and did horrible things.
Like, those two met in prison, which I kind of get. Mm. But then the people who meet in just in normal life, like, how do those conversations come up?
Right.
Like, Fred West of, like, Fred and Rose West, they would meet people and then they would say something really gross. And then if the person was like, they would go, oh, we're only joking. Test the waters kind of thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's what they do on the outside kind of thing. But then like loads of paedophiles like find each other somehow, don't they? And like send each other pictures in little groups and stuff.
I know.
It's so like, how do you fuck it? Have they got a secret sign that we don't know about? Like,
it's like me and you, Talissa. Like,
oh, I guess.
We started just talking about murders and true crime. And it was just like, well, I guess this works. I guess
I think I'm better than you're like, you think you're better than those people. You're not.
Everyone finds their peas in a pot, I guess.
There's a lid for every pot.
There's a lid for every pot. And it's, you know, it's the same for like, if I find someone who loves talking about movies or who loves talking about history or who loves talking about true crime or whatever, I just think it's interesting when criminals randomly find each other and then start taking action on those weird fantasies that they're probably sharing with each other. That, like you said, like, how do they come up? Like, how do these things get so extreme that they're talking about them to each other and they both think it's okay?
Yeah, well, they part of this documentary I was watching was saying that the guy in it, they took Polaroids of one another because they said they were going to take somebody up to, wait there, let me actually find out where the location is because you might know it because this is to do with LA.
California, yeah.
California, yeah. So they would take them to, I mean, it looks like a lovely place to go and walk. Obviously, you don't really want to do it now, but, San Gabriel Mountains.
Okay.
Do you know where that is?
Yeah. It's like East LA. It's like way past Pasadena. Not that people are going to know, but you just keep going east. And if you look at a map of LA and you keep going east, there is the Los Angeles Forest, which the San Gabriel Mountains are in that. They're like the furthest east.
It sounds so lovely above as well. A place.
It is. It's really beautiful. Like, you have all these mountains that you're looking at. And if you drive all the way to, like, Rancho Cucamonga, that's...
that sounds made up.
But yeah, it's on the way to San Bernardino. Yeah.
I've seen some horrifying things on this map already. There's a bridge to nowhere, a fucking snake, something called Snake Pit.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I was going to say... Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure or Bill and Ted's...
I've only ever watched it once.
Yeah. Well, that area, that's what I always think of when I think of that area, which is like nice, suburban, like nice place to grow up. You have the mountains in the background.
Yeah.
Small towny, kind of. Not LA.
No. Yeah, but he said, and this is my fucking worry, Rachel, whenever we go anywhere.
Yeah.
He was like, I took them there because no one could hear them scream. That's my fucking worry with all the parks. Confirmed by a serial killer. But to be fair, he didn't go on the trails. He went on the fire roads, which I'm assuming are like roads especially made for fire engines to get in and put out forest fires.
Yes, like, exactly. So there's you shouldn't no be going need on. To worry, Talissa. There's plenty of people on the trails all the time. That's where Still. We'll stick. That's where I stick when I go on my hikes.
Still, we'll take the bat. So, what I was trying to get across was they took photos with a Polaroid of them pointing down the ravines and sent them into prison. And to anyone else, it just looks like an innocent photo, but they were basically telling their fellow prisoner that they were carrying out their plan that they had talked about in prison.
Wow.
So grim.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's loads of pictures of both of them just stood there smiling, pointing down the ravines.
I'm just imagining horrible. The prisoners receiving this photo and being like, okay, cool.
I know.
That's it.
Like, they're pretty bored, I guess, in there, but still. Yeah, I'd really recommend the documentary. It was fucking good.
What's it called?
It's just called The Toolbox Killers, and it's on Now TV in the UK, but it's on Oxygen in the US.
Right. Okay. Awesome.
Yes, that's pretty good. And then I also watched a documentary today called OJ OJ The True Story or The Full Story or something. It's about OJ is innocent and they think that his son did the murder of Nicole Brown. Well, what? Hear me out, right? So this is their evidence. Ron Goldman put up a massive fight when he was murdered. For those who don't know about like the OJ murder, basically Ron Goldman, I've seen so many different stuff, so many different things saying like he was her boyfriend. He was Nicole Simpson's boyfriend or he was, they didn't know each other. They were just acquaintances or they were just friends or like there's but some people said they saw him riding around in her Porsche and some people said he'd been to the house before, but he was kind of like allegedly he was her cocaine dealer. So he might've gone to her house for that. He might've got in her car for that. Like you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And she had both her kids in the house as well that night. So it's not that likely that she's going to have someone over like, she's got plenty of opportunity to, when they're with OJ, or go to a hotel or whatever. They're trying to say that OJ came over and murdered his ex-wife because he was in a rage that Ron Goldman was there. And so Ron Goldman knew karate and he put up a massive fight. And then the people on this documentary say OJ didn't have like enough wounds on him like the next day to indicate that he had been in a fight, like the kind of fight he would have been in to
defend
himself. He had scratches on his knuckles basically. And then Werner Spitz, who is like such a famous forensic
I think he's a forensic pathologist, but he's super famous. He did like, he's been on documentaries about JonBenet Ramsey. He was in The Staircase, really old German guy. And he says that the marks on OJ's finger fit like nail marks. So as if he's either strangled Nicole or had his arm around her neck in a headlock and she's got her acrylic nails in his hand and tried to get his hand off. That's what Werner Spitz says they're from. And then somebody else counters that with, but the blood type that was under her fingernails wasn't OJ's blood type. It was blood type B. So maybe it was somebody else that did the murder.
Right.
So that's another thing that they bring up. Another thing they bring up is the knives that OJ had in his possession, like, weren't substantial enough to make the wounds that they both had. And OJ's son, Jason, was a chef, and he had knives that he would take everywhere with him as a chef. So another one of their arguments was they think it's him because he had knives, and he also had like some mental issues and had tried to kill an ex-girlfriend previously. And
how old was his son at the time?
He was 24. Like, I don't know if I'm sold on the fact that somebody else did it.
Well, the main thing that they used to get OJ free during his trial was the glove. The glove that didn't fit him.
The gloves didn't fit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so I'm wondering if that documentary addresses that part too with the son.
They don't address it with the son. They just kind of address that it doesn't fit. But I mean, like, from my point of view, that was a ridiculous, like, if the glove doesn't fit, you have to acquit. Like, that was a ridiculous thing to say, because
truly
those gloves were soaked in blood and they were leather.
Yeah.
So they've gotten wet and then stiff with blood. And they could have shrunk through that. And then he was wearing a rubber glove when he tried them on. That makes it fucking impossible to put on your hand. Like, it's just fucking, it's just stupid, like, the whole glove thing. I mean, like, there are parts of the OJ murder for me that are a little bit hard to reconcile, like the fact that he would have been absolutely covered in blood and he wasn't. And there was, like, a tiny speck of blood on the car and they were like, oh, it's like his hands would have been dripping with blood, like, given what he did, or given, you know, what whoever killed them did. So, and there was also, like, blood on Nicole's body that was like dropped from above, and they never even tested that. They just put her in a body bag and took her away.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I remember from just reading and watching that really famous, really well-made documentary, OJ in America, was that the police work was just bad.
Oh,
it was,
they
just
were
really sloppy.
Shitty forensic work. And it was also the 90s. So, like, I don't know if you could do DNA. You could only do, like, blood type, I think. And that's why they had, like, blood types. But I'm not sure if they could do, like, a full-blown, if anybody knows and wants to tell us, then go for it. But I don't think they could do, like, a full-blown DNA profile. And I'm not sure if they started taking DNA from prisoners at that point. There were handprints on the back as well of Ron Goldman's shirt, where someone had, like, grabbed the shirt and twisted it, as in, like, they're trying to hold him back or they're fighting with him. And they wanted to test that for fingerprints, because we've got, like, new technology now that can get fingerprints in blood off of fabric. And the LA police are like, no, fuck it, it's over. Like, it's the case is closed in our eyes. Like, we're not testing anything else again, which I wish they would.
That's
like,
so it's so frustrating for the families who are still fighting. They're still fighting for OJ to give them money. They're still fighting to just prove that he did it. And it's frustrating that even the police are like, no, sorry, it's over.
I think, like, even if he didn't do it, he either knows who did or he was involved. Because
it kind of reminds me of JonBenet Ramsey, where if the brother did it, then the parents are completely covering up for him.
Yeah.
And the same with OJ. If OJ if OJ's son did it, then he's just covering up for him and he's...
He's like totally as guilty. Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
just that was the fact that the police are like, sorry, it's over now. It's like, well, if it was, you know, in quotes, proven that OJ didn't do it, then doesn't that mean that there's some other killer wandering around that you never found or proved that they did it or they could have killed someone else?
It's like that taxi driver in America was telling me when he was like, they're so busy, like they every time they turn around, there's like five more murders to solve. So they...
It's true, but still.
Yeah. I'm not defending it. Like, I totally think that this should be... I totally think they should put more effort into definitively solving who did it, because being found guilty in a civil case doesn't make you 100% guilty. It doesn't answer any questions. Like,
no, it doesn't.
Because it's... You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the West Memphis 3. It's like, so they got exonerated. There's still someone out there who's killed little kids.
Right.
Like, it's still a mass... Okay, it's great that they're not in prison. That's fantastic. But who fucking did it? Like, you don't just... Yeah. You don't just, like, fucking wipe your hands and go, well, that's finished. No, it's not.
Well, isn't Paul Holes working on that?
Oh, my God,
He's been working on that, I think.
God, that's exciting. Yeah. Oh, God.
It's really exciting.
So hot for Holes.
He'll find it. Yeah.
He totally will. How do you know he's involved in that? Has he been posting on his Instagram? I need to keep up more.
No, I think he mentioned it a while ago that he was working on something to do with that. It could be a TV show. It could be a podcast. I hope it's a podcast. Yeah. I love his podcast.
And oh my God, he's got such a lovely voice.
Gone. Yeah.
He always pronounces his T's unbelievably crisp. He's like...
He's just very... what's the word? Dictation. He has good dictation.
He enunciates.
Yes.
Like he says, which is there amazing. Was going to be a better day. Like he just always says his T's perfectly. It's so good. You know, they're taking Jensen and Holes podcasts off the air. I was like, shit, I better listen to some before they go. And they had one with Amanda Knox on there. Have you listened to that?
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. She's so weird. Like, I don't know what to think.
People have now accepted her as somebody who had a really shitty media experience.
Yeah.
Was innocent.
And she's now an authority.
Now she just works. Like, she has podcasts and she does whatever. And I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat as you where it still feels really weird.
I know. Like, she's probably, like, but even Paul Hole said, I think you're completely innocent on the podcast. And in my head, I'm like,
yeah,
but the tabloids, like, I just, when I was a kid, it was like shoved down my throat so hard.
It was really ingrained in us. And it was such a formative time for both of us because you're at that age where everything seeps into your brain. So, you know, you're taking everything in and remembering things like that. And
I mean, it just goes to show how dangerous, like, the media is. If even now, it's fucking clear she's innocent. It's completely clear that she's innocent. The evidence doesn't hold up. They have a suspect that they convicted. And it still feels weird. I know she is innocent, but my brain goes, maybe not. Remember the papers. Like, kissing your boyfriend doesn't make you guilty at a crime scene.
No. Getting drunk doesn't make you guilty either.
How old was she? 20? Like,
yeah, something like that.
She was just acting like a 20-year-old who
a regular 20-year-old girl. Yeah.
Do you know what, though? She is kind of eccentric.
Yes.
She doesn't realize how eccentric she is.
I think that's, yeah. Maybe she does. She probably does because she's really smart. But I think that's the part that maybe we don't connect with because it's just like, what did she have? Like a Star Trek wedding or something like that?
Oh my God.
Some kind of alien wedding.
It was like a sci-fi. She was like explaining it. She was going, it's kind of like a sci-fi immersive theater, amateur dramatics, like play. I was like, are we still talking about a wedding? And she was delivering it with like zero irony, being like, it was, you know, kind of immersive. Like it went from scene to scene and we wrote the whole thing. I was just like, fucking hell. And then I think Billy Jensen said, and you had a really interesting registry, like, you know, people buy you presents or whatever. That was really interesting. And she kind of like gleaned over that. And I'm like, what the fuck was on her registry? Like, it's made me want to go and find it. But I feel a bit bad for her.
Wait. I feel like we all want to know now. Hold on.
Okay. I think she had a website for the wedding.
Yeah.
For people to RSVP and find out, you know, where it was and stuff. And the press found out and leaked some of the website. So that might be floating around to be accessed somewhere.
I saw it. I remember looking it up.
Oh, okay.
And it was weird. It was just like, here's our themed wedding.
And it was weird.
The thing that the articles are zeroing in on is not what was on, not the strange things that were on her registry, but that she's asking people who aren't attending to give them money.
Oh.
That's what. Yeah. It says, Amanda Knox insists she's not crowdfunding her wedding despite sharing public registry accepting donations. Again, this is the media painting her in a bad light. They didn't have to do this headline that was worded like that, where she's not crowdfunding her wedding. She says she's not, but still she's making her donations public. That is, again, the media putting her in a bad light.
Yeah, like whatever journalist wrote that, I think you've trawled the internet to find it and then published it and then gone, she's made it public. No, you found it. Like, you searched long and hard to find it. Not like, it's not like on her social media going, please give us money.
Exactly. They're not like, it's not like a GoFundMe. And also, when you get married, it's traditional. If you don't go to the wedding, you send a gift and usually it's money. So lots of people give money as a gift for a wedding, and you can offer that as an alternative on your registry. Like, hey, don't want to buy us a gift? Just give us money. That's very normal. The fact that all these articles
They've really twisted it.
Yeah, exactly. I still want to know, like, what it was Billy Jensen
for him to mention
when
it.
He said that.
And when he mentioned it, she was like, well, no, like, she kind of just was like didn't want to talk about it. She doesn't care, she'll talk about anything. So like, I really want to know. But yeah, anyway, that's a good episode of Jensen and Holes if anyone wants to listen to it. But yeah, sorry, we were talking about LA.
OJ.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, we were talking about places that we could have seen, and you said that there was a place where a Manson murder happened that was just down your street.
Yeah.
What about like Rockingham and where OJ lived? Like, is that quite far?
That's Beverly Hills. So that is West LA. It's not super far. Actually, it's where my boss lives and I went to his house the other day. So like that area.
Fancy.
It was fancy. Yeah. I mean, we could have driven past, but the house has been knocked down now. It's not there anymore.
What? OJ's house?
Yeah, I believe so. There is an OJ tour in LA.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, the house was knocked down in 1998. So
oh my God, ages ago.
A site there. Yeah, not long after the murder, which was in 1994,
Four?
I believe.
Yeah. Nicole lived in an apartment building, though. So the place where they were murdered, that's still there, I think. I was watching this program. And so basically, there's a private investigator and he's written a book called OJ is Innocent and I Can Prove It. That's what his book is called. And if you have Audible, it's free on Audible. I was like fuck yeah, I'm listening to that, because they mention it on Small Town Murder as well. He listened to it and then he did a bonus episode on it, basically summarizing the evidence. And that's what kind of made me super interested in it and made me think, because I'm a Patreon for them, and it made me think, fucking hell, maybe OJ didn't actually do the physical killing. Like, I'm open-minded to it now, which before I was like, OJ is guilty as fuck.
That book did its job.
Fucking
wow.
Had me. Yeah. Well, I don't think he's innocent, but like, what he's saying isn't total and utter horseshit, basically. You know, when you like listen to someone's theory and you're like, no, not in a million years.
Yeah.
Yeah, what he was saying,
like, owl theory in this staircase.
The owl theory, Carly believes in that, and I swear she just says it to piss me off.
The thing that I go back to that makes me think that OJ is not innocent is, why did he run? Why was this there this huge car chase?
Yeah.
Why did he need to do that?
Why is he saying he's going to kill himself?
If you're innocent. Yeah.
Also, there was a phone call. See this, but this kind of fits in with their other theory where he says the police call him and they're like, oh, your wife. I can't remember if they say she's been murdered or I think they say she's been murdered and he doesn't ask how.
Okay.
Usually yeah, you go, oh, exactly. My God, what happened? He doesn't do that. He's like, oh, God, okay, I'll come back from Chicago, because he left for Chicago, didn't he? Like the night of the murder. After it happened, he immediately got on a plane. So that was another reason that people are like, you are guilty as fuck. And but that neatly fits in with their story that the son did it, because they're like, well, he already knows what happened because his son told him.
Right. Maybe, but
I haven't finished the audiobook, which I'm gonna do.
Also going back to what we were talking about how his house was knocked down, but
yeah,
the condo where you were right, the condo where the bodies were found, that is still there. It's 875 South Bundy Drive. It's still like wet. It's in Brentwood, which is again very fancy.
Apparently she lived like 5 minutes away from him.
Yeah.
That's
they all live in that, like all the wealthy Beverly Hills people. It's like Beverly Hills, Brentwood, that whole, it's definitely a bubble.
Yeah.
When you drive there, it's like everything is clean and pristine and there's no, when you think about LA, Talissa, you know, there's homeless people everywhere. Brentwood, Beverly Hills doesn't have that. Huge streets. Huge.
Do they just sweep away the homeless people?
Yeah, exactly. Like there's, they don't want there's that none there. Of that. It's like a weird bubble of clean, rich people that don't want any riffraff or dirt or anything like that.
Also, they were saying that OJ would never park his Bronco under a tree because he didn't want it to get leaves or bird shit on it.
Okay.
Imagine, like, you've got, it is irritating when there's bird shit on your car, but you're so rich. Just get someone to clean it every time you use it.
Yeah. Like, right. Get your car cleaned every day. Why not? Pay someone, give someone money. Like, they need it.
Yeah. I mean, I'd clean a car every day for some good cash. Like, I don't mind cleaning. Yeah. Kind of chills me out. Nicole's house is a lot smaller and in an apartment block. Like, that's what I don't get as well. It must have been so fucking loud. Like, the fight, the murder, and nobody heard anything.
Well, condos, and I'm guessing in that area of Brentwood, they're still pretty big. There's a lot of space around. Like, you're still paying for privacy, and it's a condo. It's not an apartment. It's like not what we think an apartment is, where like people are on top of each other. Condos are more like they are still connected and they're still around, but they're a lot bigger. And
is it like
a
gated community more kind of thing?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. But the most shocking thing is the guy in the documentary is like, he's a PI, right? So he goes through people's rubbish. So he goes through the son's rubbish and is like, oh, he's drinking a lot of alcohol and he's on medication that you shouldn't drink alcohol with. And I'm like, that could be anyone's booze. Like, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He could have had a party. Like, it doesn't have to just be his booze. It's like what the Scientologists do when they go through people's rubbish. It's like, oh, it had loads of booze in it. So,
or like, it's like me, like, I don't drink a lot. Every once in a while, I'll put my bottle of wine. Like, I'm
you save up the bottles. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not like throwing it out every time I drink it. It's accumulating over like 2 weeks or whatever. That doesn't mean that I'm a big drinker, that all these bottles of wine and beer I just drank last night.
I know. Like, it's just such a like shitty, not provable statement that it's just because you had the audacity to go through someone's trash.
Right.
And he also says that he gets his, like, he takes a guy with him because he's not like a massive guy, takes a guy and he says, oh, his job is to take photos and document stuff or something like that. No, his job as you discover, is just to be his bodyguard. Like, because this guy is really big. He's like 6 foot something and over 200 pounds. And he says, oh, I got him to look out for me. And then I fucking hopped the fence at Nicole's apartment. That's so not cool.
No.
He's literally trespassing. Like, and he's just like, yeah. And I was, it's so creepy. And he was like, yeah. Because they must have like watched as well to make sure there was no one there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, staked it out for a bit, or maybe researched who lived there and what they did and when they would be in. And he jumps the fence, and then he's like filming going, oh yeah, they said that the perpetrator hid in the bushes, but they couldn't have hidden because look how little foliage there is here, and there's a brick wall here. And I'm just like, you're acting like you're not trespassing.
Yeah, you did it. You just hopped the fence and no one sees you, so clearly it can be done.
Yeah, he's not cool. He's fucking underhand. I don't know what his motivation is.
Why he's so interested in this case.
Yeah. I guess it's just to write the book and get money, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. I would believe that. I was just going to say, that reminds me, I don't know if like my phone is listening to me or...
Oh God, it definitely is.
There's an algorithm. the algorithm. But I've all of a sudden been getting these emails that are jobs that you can apply for. And the jobs are specifically investigator assistants.
Oh my God.
And I was like, why do I keep getting these emails? And I looked it up. I was like, what even is an investigative assistant? Like, what is that? And I looked it up, and it is somebody that, it reminded me because you said this guy like hired a bodyguard. And I was like,
yeah,
you know, it is basically someone who processes all of these things that the detective or the investigator is finding.
Oh my God, are you going to do it?
I'm like, it's really good money.
Is it? Oh my God.
Yeah. It's like over 100 grand a year.
Whoa. Maybe I'm going to move over and do it.
You'd be so good at it.
I really would be.
You should.
I would be fucking great. I'd be like Aaron Brockovich.
I think to close out our true crime chat on LA.
Yeah.
Both the Manson murders and the OJ trial were two huge things that happened in LA that really impacted LA. I was reading about it earlier today that the Manson murders, before they happened, it was the 60s and everyone in LA was just this, it was like this free, everyone was enjoying themselves, having a great time, taking drugs, connecting with each other. And then the Manson murders happened and it completely changed how people in LA just lived and talked to each other. Nobody felt safe anymore. And it's not the same as what happened with the OJ trial, but it did change how people looked at, because so much of it was centered around race, and that's how they got him acquitted, was they basically said, if you think that OJ did it, then you are a racist.
Yeah.
And that is how he got free, and it really shifted how people were in LA.
If you were white, you thought he was guilty. If you were black, you thought he was innocent. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the general consensus, like, at the time.
There was a huge divide.
Yeah, it ripped people in half. And that was, it happened just after the Rodney King got beaten up, which kicked off some riots. And then that was a real, like, black versus white thing. It's a bit like the Black Lives Matter protests today, except I think there's a lot more white people on the side of good this time.
Right.
Yeah. Than there were in the 80s. Obviously, it's still like, there's still a massive divide and there's still a lot of racism. But yeah, like the Manson murders kind of kicked off that whole serial killer fucking nutty shit in LA, I feel. After that, it was like floodgates.
Yes.
Yeah.
People felt really unsafe after that, when before they didn't. It was like exactly what you think, hippie 60s America, flower crowns, acid, communes, all that kind of stuff. And then this just like flatlined everyone. It was like, no more fun anymore.
Well, I feel like there's still pockets of flower crowns and acid around LA. Oh, and I felt like I saw.
Yes,
I felt like Joshua Tree was one of them.
Yeah. California will always have that.
Yeah, Carly very much enjoyed her sage that I brought her back to burn, by the way.
Aww.
She was like, did you steal this from the Airbnb? And I was like, no, I bought it, you fucker.
I also bought three different kinds. Do you remember that from that little shop? So
yeah, I think I can
even
remember.
I am a little bit of those. I am a little bit of those people as well. I'm sort of in that
boat. You can't live there without being a little bit sage, Bernie. It's the law.
I don't think you can. Yeah. It just happens naturally.
Okay, so I better let you go burn some sage. Clear this bad juju.
I'll let you get back to your feet. Fet? Is that what it's called?
Fate.
And your pints. Fate. Yeah. And your
I was
pints
like, feet.
And your cups of tea.
British people love feet. Okay. All right. Well.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy our special guest next week, whoever it may be. I don't know who it is yet. I can guess.
I don't have that many friends.
Send me positive vibes and hopefully I'll be back and I'll be talking much better than I am now without this big metal piece in my mouth.
Oh, okay, Rach. Well, come on. All right. Can do it, Tiger. All right. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Transatlantic Crime this week. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at TransatCrimePod, Instagram at Transatlantic Crime, and on Facebook with Transatlantic Crime Podcast.
Thanks, bye.